everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John Couch. John engineering and producing the show, and we're off and running on this Tuesday. Here we are, February the 9th, 2021. We in our 11th year on the radio in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio on 1030. Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. All of our programs archived. We have our worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. The Buckmaster Show live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We're off and running as we resume now our every other month interview series presented by Pima Community College. This series introduces our listeners to the talented and dedicated educators at Pima Community College. Joining us on the live line, Dr. David Doré. Dr. Doré, the president of campuses and executive vice chancellor at PCC. Dr. Doré, how are you?
I'm doing very well, Bill. How about yourself?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. It's been a while since we've checked in on what's going on at Pima in light of with COVID and all of the education restrictions that have been in place. What's the situation on your campuses right now, David?
So, Bill, there haven't been a lot of changes in terms of the operations since I last spoke with you in April in terms of the number of people. You know, we currently have no more than 20% of the students and staff on a site at any given time, and we've pretty much stayed under that number. And we've continued with limited on-site instruction in hands-on fields such as first responder and healthcare and industry and technology fields. And you know, Bill, I really want to thank all of our faculty and staff who have demonstrated incredible dedication, innovation, and compassion for our students during this time. You know, one new development, you know, for our students that are listening is a virtual callback service that has a very quick callback time. And students may visit our website to request a callback. And this was implemented last fall, and we've had over 20,000 of these callbacks. And so this is a really popular service, and I encourage our students to use that service. So that gives you a little bit of what's going on the campuses.
How quickly are the callbacks happening? So if someone's got a question, they'll get an answer pretty quickly?
Yeah, the majority of those will get an answer in 5 minutes. So they just
really
they sign up in a queue, and then we get right back with them. It's much more efficient than calling on the telephone.
Yeah, sounds terrific. Before COVID, I think we will come to say PC pre-COVID times. There were several major initiatives that were really getting underway and launched at PCC. Give us a brief overview on what's going on with those initiatives.
Yes, thank you for asking, Bill. So, you know, as you know, we've been aligning the college very much to the needs of our local business and industry, and really to the future of work. And so those initiatives focus primarily around our centers of excellence. And interestingly, the pandemic has really accelerated our work in that area, and I just want to share just a couple examples. So our new Automotive Technology and Innovation Center, that is a 47,000 square foot facility, which we are just now completing. And that's going to feature new curriculum that will include, integrating autonomous and electric vehicle into the curriculum. And this is scheduled to be open for our students in the fall of 2021. And then we also at our downtown campus have begun construction on our new advanced manufacturing facility, and that's going to be a 100,000 square foot facility that's going to house our welding and robotics, industrial technology, mechatronics, and additional programs. And again, these applied tech programs are really aligned, which we can talk about later, perhaps, around the reskilling and recovery that's going on really nationally right now. And then one final example I'd like to share is the construction and remodel of our Aviation Technology Center out by the airport. And that started construction in the fall of 2020, and it's on schedule as well. And I really want to thank Governor Ducey and the state legislature, who allocated a $15 million one-time appropriation to allow the college to double the size of that facility, which will allow us to increase the output in this aerospace and aviation sector in terms of mechanics is certainly a high need area.
It sounds like these three examples that you just cited are in step with the 21st century thinking as far as the employment sector.
Absolutely. And that becomes, you know, really critical to all of our programs, you know, whether those are short-term programs, degree programs, transfer programs. We want our students to end up in, you know, high-wage, high-skill jobs.
The college, the community college of the 21st century certainly has changed dramatically, hasn't it, David?
Oh, absolutely, Bill. And in many ways, the pandemic has been a significant factor in accelerating that change as well.
How so, David Dore?
Well, you know, Bill, I'd like to talk a little bit about the struggles of our students and some of the changes that we have had to make to address the struggles of the pandemic. You know, one thing is the majority of our students are part-time. We have about 70% of our students are part-time, and that's due to, you know, obligations that they have or perhaps lack of resources to be a full-time student. And so, you know, the pandemic has really resulted in a lot of struggles for these students. And you know, for many of them, they have financial challenges and then changing employment situations because of this, you know, new skills that are needed and so forth. And so one of the things we've done, and we're very grateful, you know, we received CARES Act funding from that first stimulus bill, and we distributed over $5 million directly to over 6,000 students. And so that's been really important. And now we're planning actually for the next round of funds. We anticipate, it's called the CARISA Act. It's the Coronavirus Response and Relief Supplemental Appropriations Funds. And we're expecting to get approximately $22 million in federal funds. And again, a large portion of that will go directly to students. But some of the ways we've adapted as well is, you know, we've identified some innovative cost saving measures for students. And one example is what we call open educational resources, which greatly reduces or eliminates the cost of textbooks for students. You know, and so far we've saved students over $2 million by implementing this open educational resource. The other thing, you know, our students are really struggling with food and housing insecurity, and so, you know, we're using those CARES funds and those CARISA Act funds to address some of this by putting funds directly into the hands of students. And also we're partnering with multiple community organizations. And, you know, for example, we received a grant from the Community Food Bank of Southern Arizona to build out our own food pantries at Pima so that we can get food directly to students. Another big change is technology, right? And the pandemic has really accelerated that need for students to have access to good technology, both, you know, devices and then to also have internet access. And so we've distributed over 2,000 mobile devices out on loan to our students so that they can actually continue their coursework as well.
So now charting ahead here, and hopefully we're getting vaccine into a lot of arms before the fall semester begins. What is your thinking about fall?
So that's a very good question, and then everyone is concerned about the fall. So, you know, Dr. Francisco Garcia, who is the Pima County Chief Medical Officer and Deputy County Administrator, he attended our governing board meeting last week to provide some guidance, you know, as we prepare for the fall. And, you know, one of the things is the COVID vaccine is now available to all Pima faculty and staff. And so it is our hope that, you know, the majority of our faculty and staff will get vaccinated, you know, certainly by the summer, if not before. You know, I want to say our decisions about the fall semester really, our number one priority continues to be the health and safety of our students and our employees. And so what we intend to do is to follow all CDC, Pima County, state, and national guidelines as we plan for the summer. And we're going to continue to follow these health and safety protocols even for those who've been vaccinated, right? So we will continue to require personal protective equipment for all those that are on campus. And what we have, what we're doing now is we're planning our fall schedule, and we actually have three scenarios so that we're able to pivot one way or the other if we need to. So our plan A is that we would have, you know, full operation of the college in this, what I would call a post-COVID new normal. And then plan B is that we're open about 50% of the face-to-face offerings at any given time. So that would include courses, student services, academic support, and so forth. And then plan C is to pivot back to essentially what we're doing right now in the spring. And you know, so overall, this is a fluid situation that can change from day to day. So we as a college remain very flexible, and we're making decisions based on the health and safety of our employees and students. So what, in terms of the schedule then, on this 50%, we're capping classes so that we can have more safe classrooms. And, you know, we can pivot by, you know, raising the cap if we're able to, or we can pivot by, you know, decreasing those caps even more and then reverting back to virtual if we need to.
All right, Dr. David Doré, the president of campuses and executive vice chancellor, Pima Community College. David, probably the best thing to do for students. And if people would like more, go to pima.edu. How's that sound?
That sounds perfect, Bill.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for having me, Bill. It's always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Thank you very much. Buckmaster Show, presented by Mona's Danish Bakery, my favorite bakery in town. Valentine's Day is coming up this weekend, and Steve, owner and chief baker, he's got some goodies planned for you, so that's something to think about. How about a Valentine cake? I mean, they've got some interesting ideas up at Mona's Danish Bakery, and of course, a Danish crinkle would be a good idea on Valentine's Day morning. They're open at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open right now for lunch, open at breakfast, 6:30 in the morning. You can check out what they have available at monasdanishbakery.com. Our thanks to Mona's for their longtime support of the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Shelley Fishman is with me in studio. He's giving me a thumbs, not up, not down, but sideways. That means kind of an average day on the market, but we've got some other very interesting things to talk about with Shelley right after this.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. the RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
If it can't be grown, then it must be mined. Cause without minerals, you never find your phones, your cars, your solar panels, or your smart TVs with your favorite channels. Hospitals, schools, and public facilities result from mining's vast abilities. Dividends, taxes, and high-paid employment come from mining for your enjoyment. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And here he is, Mr. Shelley Fishman. Shell, how are you?
I am well today, Bill. How you doing today?
Doing well. I was kind of reflecting driving in that it was St. Patrick's Day, that all of the really, where things went south with COVID.
Yeah.
You know, we're only like about a month away from the end of the 1 year anniversary of this. And I'm thinking about how the unemployment and the jobless rate has just really been a tragedy for so many families.
Oh, it's, you know, and it's not fully picked up in the statistics because so many people have dropped out of the job market that they're not reflected in the actual unemployment numbers. The numbers we got on Friday were, you know, generally grim. We had 7,000 new private sector jobs for the whole month of January, with a total of about just north of 40,000 jobs created all told in January. We need to have, you know, 200,000 in a normal year, but $600,000 or $700,000 just jobs just to make up for what we lost last year. And instead, December and November were recalculated down.
Those are really anemic numbers, Shelley.
Yeah, they really are. However, people aren't looking backwards, Bill. People are looking forward now. Mm-hmm. And most economists have a really upbeat view of where this economy can go in this year. There's a general feeling that there will be a significant stimulus, might not be a billion, you know, a trillion nine.
But something
is something
coming.
Large.
I agree with you. Yes, something's coming.
And that will find its way quickly into the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And that even without such a stimulus, the economy could easily grow 3.5 to 4% this year overall. With a good stimulus, you know, we could get a number closer to 6%. Now, keep in mind, we're starting off at a low point in terms of the gross domestic product overall. But by the end of the year, if we get a really good year in growth, we could be back where we were in January of 2020. And that would be actually not as fast, certainly, as the, you know, the V-shaped optimists mm-hmm. were looking for, but a lot faster than some of the pessimists were forecasting. So this whole speed around the vaccination, I know you got...
I did.
And your bride got the first shots yesterday.
Very, very pleased.
So you know, people are, by and large, taking advantage, looking for the shot. Some people are unfortunately doing things they shouldn't be doing to take advantage. But you know, the largest majority of people are anxious to get the shot. They understand there may be some risks involved, but those risks are far less than getting the disease.
Can I do a big shout out? Because we both, Shelley, you got yours also down at the TCC.
I
just want to do a quick shout out, if you don't mind, to the Tucson firefighters.
Absolutely.
Who were doing a fantastic job yesterday. And it was a very smooth, professional organization from start to finish. So
the volunteers
kudos.
Were all over the place.
All over the place.
But the firefighters were actually doing the injections.
Yes.
I did not feel
the shot going in, which was normally, you know, you get a flu shot, they kind of throw it into your arm. I was shocked.
It was really great to see.
Yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I wanted to do that shout out. Go ahead. It's hard to kind of get a feel for the accuracy of these unemployment numbers.
And the impact.
The impact.
Because the people who are actually feeling the unemployment crunch are the people who can least afford to be in that position. So we have this K, you know, in the economy with the upper arm of the K being people who are doing just fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the very middle are probably people who are not better off or worse. But the bottom part of that K is a whole bunch of people who are being impacted by getting the disease and having worse disease outcomes than the rest of the population. Plus, they're the people who can least afford to be unemployed and are, unfortunately, they're the people who are bearing the brunt of this unemployment situation, and it's tragic.
David Leonhardt?
Yeah, David Leonhardt.
He was going into some interesting, in the Sunday New York Times about the numbers, and he kind of goes back to 2012 and sort of plowed into this whole thing about the numbers.
So made my heart thump. you and I have been talking for years now about the fact that even though it's counterintuitive, the Democratic administrations have been far better for the economy than Republican administrations. And I spreadsheeted the whole thing and went back to 1945.
Yeah, you did.
And proved it out. And, you know, GDP growth was bigger, stock market growth was bigger, employment growth was bigger. And, you know, everybody says, that can't be right. Republicans are always better for the economy. They're not.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, in 2012, Leonhardt, who was at the time the bureau chief in Washington for the New York Times, did an analysis to see what the effect of tax cutting was on the economy. And he did an analysis, got some economists to work with him, and it turns out that the more you cut taxes, especially at the top brackets on the economy, the worse the economy grows. In fact, it's bizarre that cutting taxes, lowering taxes, and lowering GDP growth happens like simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's
mm-hmm.
bizarre. So what did Leonhardt do? He went to Paul Ryan, who at the time was the Speaker of the House and running for vice president, and confronted Ryan with these numbers. And Ryan said, yeah, that's probably true, but there's no causality between tax policy and economic growth, to which you scratch your head and say, then why would you ever run a deficit?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, last Sunday, and the Times actually was published a little bit earlier in the week, what Leonhardt did, he's no longer the bureau chief, he's now just a commentator for the Times, wrote an extended article, Why Are Republican Presidents So Bad for the Economy? And it verified all my numbers. Now, we did not consult on this. I don't know David Leonhardt. But he basically said the economy has grown significantly faster under Democratic presidents than Republican ones. And it's true for, and I'm quoting here, true for almost any major indicator, gross domestic product, employment, incomes, productivity, even stock prices. And then the article goes on and demonstrates a great deal of raw data that was collected by two Princeton economists.
So regardless of how you feel politically, you're saying those are the facts.
The numbers are the numbers. You know, we can right. disregard them.
Yes.
We can say, oh, they don't mean anything. Democrats were always recovering from Republican downturns.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that says a lot in itself. But the facts are the facts. Since Lanhart does it since Roosevelt, I don't think that's fair. I do it since the end of World War
sure.
II. You know, for 70 years now, or using Lanhart, almost 90 years, Republicans do way better. If you go back further than that into the Depression, it gets worse for Republicans.
Quick comment on inflation and stimulus. This was a topic of Monday political face-off. Will a big stimulus necessarily translate into higher inflation?
At some point, printing money will be inflationary. We don't know what that point is, and we don't have any evidence over the past 30 or 40 years to indicate that running large deficits will create an inflationary trend. And we do know that the Fed, who's got interest rates essentially at zero now, has got a lot of room to correct for inflation if it starts.
Okay. Shelley Fishman, always a pleasure. And we'll see you next Tuesday.
Yes,
thanks, Shelley.
Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We've got Valentine's Day weekend coming up, and I know you want to do something very special for your particular Valentine. How about heading over to Green Things? 13 acres of amazing plants, trees, annuals, and more. Roses are wonderful. I love roses. I buy roses, try to treat myself and my wife to cheering things up with roses. But think about maybe something different over at Green Things, some kind of a flowering plant or something for the garden that will last quite a while. And that will be something to remind you of Valentine's Day 2021. Green Things, 3384 East River Road. Not only Green Things for the beautiful plants, but Zocalo Village for all that great pottery from Mexico, Talavera pottery, handcrafted furniture, a lot of things at Green Things and Zocalo Village. GreenThingsAZ.com, ZocaloVillage.com, 3384 East River Road, open daily. Well, February is Heart Healthy Awareness Month. Our next guest on the live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, is Susan Smith, a wife, mother, grandma, sister, and a friend who had a heart attack 3 years ago today. Thank goodness Susan survived the attack, and she lives to educate women about heart disease, the number one killer for women. You can see Susan in her TV commercials for Tucson Medical Center's cardiac campaign, and she spreads the word all over Southern Arizona by speaking to women's groups, and she joins us now on the live line. Susan, how are you?
I'm good, Bill. Thank you for having me. This is a treat.
Yeah, well, 3 years ago, certainly I'm sure that memory is very vivid in your mind. You woke up and probably didn't think, gee, today's going to be the day that will probably change my life forever.
You know what? I woke up that morning thinking about how busy my day was and had lots of things planned, and I wanted to hurry up and get it started. So I started off in a rush and a hustle, and I got interrupted big time.
How did it happen as far as the big time symptoms?
Well, I will tell you that I had some ongoing nagging symptoms. I know now they were symptoms, but I didn't at the time. I had a sensation of someone pinching my collarbone. It wasn't painful, but it felt like a pinch. It was uncomfortable. And I would get short of breath and a little lightheaded. And then I was tired all the time, and that's unusual fatigue. But I was, you know, I had an excuse for everything. I thought my pillow was too flat. That's why I was tired. Or that, you know, I was short of breath because I talked too fast, or I was lightheaded because I stood up too fast. You know, we women do that. We do avoid our symptoms. We want to take care of everyone else first.
I've heard that the symptoms are different for women than men. Could you articulate that for us, Susan?
Oh, yes. This is one of the best examples. I didn't know my symptoms because I thought the symptoms for a heart attack were those I've seen in a man in the movies or in novels, where they have pain in their left arm, crushing chest pain. They clutch their chest and fall to the floor. You know that image. You've seen it.
Of course.
And that's what I thought a heart attack was like, and you had to have crushing chest pain and all those things. And I didn't have those. So all women react differently. They have different symptoms. And we have discomfort or pressure in our upper body, and I can, in your neck or your jaw or your shoulder, your back. I mean, I've talked to so many women and they have these little discomforts, and it's not crushing chest pain, so they let it go. But that shortness of breath, sweating, lightheadedness, unusual fatigue, nausea, indigestion, those are all things that we should notice because they are symptoms, and most of us don't know that.
Had you been taking any precautions before your heart attack to reduce your risk factors?
Oh, if I could laugh out loud, I would. No way. I was one of those women that just is on the go all the time and has, you know, too much to do and not enough time, and just taking on more and more projects. So I took no precautions. I didn't, although I appeared physically fit, I didn't really exercise to benefit my heart. I didn't care what I ate. I didn't manage stress. I didn't, you know, none of those things. No, I did not.
How did the recovery go for you? What was your treatment?
I tell you, the recovery from a heart attack is the most important thing to help you get back to your old physical self. And number one, you have to go to cardiac rehab. It's a monitored exercise program in a hospital setting. So you're hooked up to a monitor and you exercise to strengthen your heart and your body. The other thing you have to strengthen is your spirit. So I always recommend joining a support group or even counseling. And then that, you know, diet, eat heart healthy. Those are things that really help you get back on track after a heart attack.
3 years since the big day, how are you feeling now, Susan Smith?
I feel really good. And I chuckle here because I'm real busy. You know, that was my thing. I was too busy. But I'm busy with the work of spreading the word. And that gives me joy. And I now manage my busyness. I put quotes around that. And it's managing your energy. So I feel really good. If I don't manage my energy and I allow myself to get worn out or tired or stressed emotionally, I feel that. And I feel it in my heart. You know, there are things now that I just have to live with. I want to live many years longer, but we heart survivors know our limitations, and we know our own energy, and we know our bodies. We have to watch it all the time.
Susan, what are your suggestions for our listeners to get an assessment? Is age a big factor, or what would you suggest?
I always tell women that you can get a heart baseline at any age, especially if you have heart disease in your family. So I talk to many young women who have it in genetics, and they should get a baseline. So all you have to do is go to your regular doctor. You don't need a specialist or a cardiologist, and have him measure these four things. That's your blood pressure, your weight, so that he can get a BMI, which is your body mass index, your cholesterol, and your blood sugar. And if he knows your family history and he has those four measurements, then that is your baseline. So if your blood pressure is not, if it is considered normal or average, then he'll help you with that as far as either giving you medication or referring you to the cardiologist. Same with your cholesterol. So once you know those things, you can just monitor them every year. And that way you know your heart, you know your numbers.
Susan Smith, going to have to run Heart Attack Survivor, Women Heart Champion through the Mayo Clinic, a program they're running, and you're really out there spreading the word. I appreciate you coming on the program, and congratulations as a heart attack survivor, 3 years to the day. Keep going, keep doing what you're doing. Thank you very much, Susan.
Thank you, Bill. This was great.
Thanks a lot. Susan Smith, who survived a heart attack 3 years to the day, February being Heart Healthy Month. Hopefully that information will save some lives and help some people. It's the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. Be right back.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, New Mexico. We're waiting for you to open up again to out-of-state visitors so our Buckmaster Show listeners can jump in the car and take that only 3-hour drive area east of Tucson to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. You can start your planning now by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. And so much to do over there, so many outdoor activities and great places to stay as well in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Again, start your planning now at southwestnewmexico.org. Our monthly visit, our Tucson Arts Report with Margaret Regan, who is the longtime editor. I think she started writing about the arts in 1991 for the Tucson Weekly. Margaret is the author of two prize-winning books on immigration, Detained and Deported, Stories of Immigrant Families Under Fire. And before that, it was The Death of Jocelyn, Immigration Stories from the Arizona-Mexico Borderlands. Both books are still available at Amazon and other places. So, and Margaret also spent a while at the Tucson Public Library as their resident writer. Is that what that was? But unfortunately, it was during the COVID times. Margaret, how are you?
I'm good, Bill. How are you doing?
Doing very well. And speaking of the library, we'll have Amber Mathewson, the head of the library, on the show tomorrow, talking about how they have navigated this very difficult time. And it's been a very difficult time, not only for the library, but for the arts as
Absolutely.
Well. And we're all hoping that the more people get the vaccine in their arms, that the mm-hmm. day will come where we can continue to maybe see some of our venues open up. And that's gradually happening, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I'm just working right now on a story for the weekly, the Spring Arts Preview.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm surprised. I haven't really written this down yet, but I'm surprised to see how many places are open. The Tucson Museum of Art's been open since the summer. Carrie Etherton at Etherton Gallery's been open. The MoCA has been open. The museum on the west side. The Tucson Arts, I always get it mixed up, Tucson Arts Desert Landscape, something like that. On the, it's a an art museum out on Tonka Verde, and they're open. But it's interesting to lure people in. You know, they're doing limited numbers of people are allowed to come at a time. Everybody has to wear masks. You can't get in without a mask, and they try to do social distancing. So, you know, I guess some of them are doing okay. I was pleased to see that Terry Etherton, I did speak to him. He's feeling pretty optimistic. I mean, he's an optimistic guy anyway, if you know him.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been able to get some of these government grants that help him pay the rent and pay the payroll. And he says he's doing well. Also selling a lot of stuff online, which is obviously a thing that can happen nowadays. It's wonderful for a lot of the for-profit galleries as opposed to the museums. But he's opening up a really good show next week called For the Record, Documentary Photographs from the Etherton Gallery Archive. And if you're familiar with them, you know that they have amazing photos there, and it'll be terrific to see them. Danny Lyon, Diane Arbus, Bernice Abbott, Robert Frank. So, you know, life goes on and the art goes on. And, you know, we're hoping, as you say, once more people get vaccinated, more people will be willing to come out and more galleries will open up.
And that the venue you mentioned, it's called the Tucson Desert Art Museum over on Tanka Verde, and they were a sponsor. I think they were with us about a year. They were a sponsor for us on the Buckmaster Show a couple of years ago.
Really?
And it's an interesting little museum over there, and they've got some very nice pieces, so I would definitely recommend it. Tucson Desert Art Museum. Margaret,
yeah.
I know the piece you've got coming up in the weekly on Thursday is looking at, it's a book review, really. Bend in the Wash is the name of the book, the Rancho Linda Vista Artist Colony. And for folks that don't know, this has a very rich history, this colony, or community, I guess you could call it.
Yeah, this was really fun to write. This is the first book. That place has been around for 53 years, and it's still going strong. And this is the first time, as far as we can tell, the author and I, I tried to figure it out too, we believe it's the first book that's ever been written by this very influential arts colony that just north of Tucson. So, and, you know, this is a good story for an arts writer in the pandemic time, too, because I just had to read a book in my house.
Yes, <that's laughs>
I didn't have to go anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a wonderful book. It's chock-a-block with beautiful paintings. The Rancho Linda Vista group started in 1968. As you know, that was a time of great rebellion and people doing, you know, going back to the land. And it was primarily a bunch of U of A professors who bought this piece of land up in Oracle, and, you know, some of them could hardly afford it. They were paying $1,000 per family for the down payment. It's not sound like much money to us now, but when you're a low-paid arts professor, I guess it was. But they got 80 acres, just beautiful acres, with views of the mountains to the south, you know, the Catalina Mountains. And it had been a dude ranch, so there were all these little houses on it. So they each had their own house. They didn't have that kind of commune where they're all having to live together, and I think that's one reason it lasted as long as it did. But it's just fascinating to read about this. And, you know, many of them became, you know, as their careers went on, they became very well-known artists. We have Bruce McGrew, who's one of my favorites. I actually have a little watercolor that he did. He was an amazing watercolor painter, you know, world class. We had Andrew Rush, who's still around at the age of 90, living part-time still up at the ranch. And, you know, he found it in the drawing studio.
Oh, the drawing studio, yeah.
Very successful. Yes. Yeah, so he was.
And he's 90 years old. Wow.
He's 90 years old, oh. Yeah. And Fox McGrew is 80 years old, and she's still producing. She had a nice show planned last year. It was going to be at Davis Dominguez Gallery, which has since closed. And that show was canceled because of the coronavirus. But she's still working hard, too. So it's a really interesting book. You know, I'd highly recommend it. It's pricey. It's $90 because, you know, it is so beautifully put together. But the author, Paul Gold, he was a student at the U of A. I guess he knew some of them then. He didn't become an artist himself, but he, you know, stuck around. Kemp was often up there, I guess. Took him 15 years to write this thing, with all kinds of interviews with the artists, some of them now dead. So it's a very worthwhile thing.
Yeah, what's going on up there now? Is there are they still active at the Rancho Linda Vista?
Yeah, it's so interesting. There was a story last year that I wrote about the third generation. All these artists, many of them, you know, were married and had children. A lot of the marriages broke up because there's a lot of hanky-panky going on up there back in those days.
Oh, yeah.
But so there was this whole generation of children who grew up there, and a lot of them came back. You know, they're middle-aged now, and they came back earlier on. You know, they grew up and went on their way, but a lot of them came back because they wanted their children to have that amazing experience of living in that beautiful place and living around very creative people. So those kids, some of them now grown up, the third generation, some of them are still living there and they're artists. So it's very interesting. I think they're doing really well right now. They always want to have people that want to move in there.
The third generation of the Summer of Love children.
Yeah, that's right.
To quote a Jefferson Airplane line, 67
right.
was heaven.
Yeah.
Anyway, they have quite a rich history there at Rancho Linda Vista. Did you want to quickly mention, I've got 30 seconds, about a TMA show?
Yeah, real quick. You know, I'm from Pennsylvania, and not too far from Chad's Ford, where the Wyeth family presides. You know, that's a big family of artists over a century. And of all things, here we are in the Desert West. There's this huge show about all the Wyeths, many Wyeth artists in the Tucson Museum of Art. And I'd really recommend the show. It's a lot of fun.
All right. That show is up through May 28th at the Tucson Museum of Art. Margaret Regan, always good to check in with you. We'll check in a month or so. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, Bill.
The Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our thanks to Rincon Ventures for sponsoring our live line. And it's the Buckmaster Show Tuesday, wrapping it up. We'll be back with you 12:04 tomorrow for our midweek edition of the program. We'll talk with Paul Cunningham, Tucson City Councilman. Thanks to John Couch, engineering and producing our show. We've got Dave Ramsey, his popular show about all things to do with money and lifestyle. Have a great afternoon, everybody.
KVOI Cortero, AM 1030, the voice of Tucson. Trusted local news and talk. A Bustos Media Station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home.